What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
You know, I've talked to Mr. Tron Carter about this. Like, not every major is that full-blown validation. However, if you win the Masters, football game. Like, you've done it. You know, you're there.
So, a couple things there before we move on to 2019, which is what we're all here for, let's be honest. And then just coming off the green, Tiger walking off the green on 18, like stuff that makes you legitimately tear up.
I'm not bullshitting. I still cry every time I watch the YouTube video. Again, I'm not trying to make this just sound like funny and dramatic. I cry every time, and I've watched it 6 times.
Welcome, 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 welcome back. To all the fellow Mudball Monday listeners, it is Walker Simas and Henry Schimpf joining you for episode 124. And I feel like we've been doing this all year. We've just been ready for the Masters since November. It's been so dry. And we are going to quite literally force it upon you an additional week. I'm sure we'll do another two or three of these just because it's obligatory. This is our Masters primer of sorts, except we're looking back on three of our favorite years. In our recent memory of the Masters. Henry Schimpf, we were together all weekend. He is back in Austin, Texas. How the hell are you?
I'm stellar. I'm fired up to talk about the Masters, you know, and the show notes for the episode, which sometimes I'll write before we record. To your point there, like being ready for the Masters, I mean, it's just been such a funky year in professional golf. And it feels like more than ever, we need the Masters. Like we always want the Masters. We really need the Masters right now. You know, I don't know what the shit's going on with professional golf. The best player in the world is Joaquin Niemann, and anyone who declines that is probably just not thinking about things the right way. So it's a brother who's playing the best golf. PGA Tour, what's going on out there? I don't really know. I don't think anybody does. We need a major, and we need the Masters. So this is kind of, as you put it, this is our primer to what will probably be a more formal primer to come. But yeah, excited to talk about it.
Do you mind leading us off in the dirt today? Drinking, eating, reading, thinking. What do you got?
Not even in the slightest. I will kind of do my D and E together and just provide like a brief synopsis of kind of my Wednesday evening through Saturday morning, essentially, and a couple D and E call outs that fell in there. So Wednesday and Thursday, like work stuff going on, pretty busy, couple events, and got into a couple drinks each night. And not a ton of sleep. Fly in Tampa on Friday. And I'll dip into my E here. You and I, straight from the airport, go to this just delightful little Vietnamese restaurant. And the highlight of that meal, and really a lot of Vietnamese meals, Nguoc Chum. I was thinking about Nguoc Chum this afternoon. And what makes it so good? It's one of the best sauces. It's not, you know, it's a, yes, it's a sauce, but you know, it's thin, so it's a liquid essentially. But you think about the balance that you have there. I mean, you have rice vinegar, which has a little bit of sweetness to it. You do have sugar, so that's your straight up sweetness. So we've got acidity, we've got sour, we've got sweetness, we've got the umami saltiness out of fish sauce, which I just absolutely love fish sauce. And then depending on exactly who's making it, you're going to have some spiciness from the red chili flakes. The only thing missing from Nguoc Chum is there's no fat, which is fine, but that makes it pair super well with fat. So yes, a spring roll is going to be nice with Nguoc Chum, but you dip an egg roll in there as each of us did, and you introduce the fattiness, and it's just game over. So that was easily my meal of the week. And then kind of going backwards here to my D, as I laid out, like some drinks on Wednesday, drinks on Thursday, not enough sleep, travel, all this, everything going on. Went to bed reasonably late on Friday. We were up at 4:45 to get Cab at Citrus. The content will come. And so, I mean, people know where this one's going. Like, what happens with 4:45 when you're heading out to shoot content, you got an hour on the road? Like, it is absolute good walk season. And the Mudball half calf didn't even exit stage left. In fact, it never even made it into this film. It was always going to be South American dark roast season. So the Chemex was grinding early, and we were on the road sipping Good Walk Coffee. So if the concept of Good Walk Coffee appeals to you, head straight to goodwalkcoffee.com. Use code THE TIE. That's THE TIE for 20% off anything on the site. We highly recommend doing so. And that's all I got. Actually, I lied. I do have one more thing. It had been like 7 years. So I got home this afternoon, quick workout, was looking for just like some quick stuff to eat after it. Had some biltong. But you know, ideally after a workout, you're going to have basically like straight protein and straight carbs, kind of keep the fat low. Didn't have any fruit with me and needed to get gas. So I stopped by the gas station. I was like, what can I get here that's not just like complete and utter trash, that's just straight carbs? And, you know, be it as it may, it probably is straight trash, but it had been so long since I'd had a Rice Krispie treat, which is just straight carbs. And I want to give a shout out to Rice Krispie treats because they're electric. So that's the final point of my eating. Okay, moving on to my reading. What a complex guy. I mean, a lot of respect for Faraday. Obviously, he's had a strange career as a professional golfer, as an announcer. But I would highly recommend checking out the John Feinstein biography. Excuse me. Yes, biography of David Faraday, because learning more about kind of everything that's gone into to his path and where he is these days is quite interesting. So I've thoroughly enjoyed that one. And then my thinking. This is going to be the first somewhat serious live thought I've ever given here. So you and I were talking about this last night. I shared some thoughts last week on Anthony Kim, and you know, obviously it wasn't good. He didn't play that well, but it's been 12 years. And so I don't think the expectations should have been that high, but let's set the golf aside. I do think like if you give him a year or two and he's actually committed to professional golf, we'll probably see some pretty good stuff. I mean, clearly he's an incredibly talented guy. I would bet on him to play some pretty good golf out there. But my big takeaway from this week, frankly, is like the form he was in. I'm not talking about golf. I'm talking about the way he looked was like brutal. And like all jokes aside, it was brutal. I mentioned this to you last night. He was actually probably the only golfer, set aside the cat, who made any like real impression on me when I was young. I mean, we were like 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, when he was really good. And I loved the guy. Like I still do. But he was absolutely, once again, set aside the cat, my favorite golfer far and away. And for him to come back and I you know, I was on the internet this afternoon and the term was, which people can probably sort through just fine themselves, Coke nose, I think is what's going on.
Interesting.
That's kind of the nasal situation that people are insinuating. You know, this is my ball Monday. This is all pure speculation. Don't take this as journalism. I wouldn't be surprised to hear like the guy got the fucking shit beat out of him at some point, just based on what I was seeing. It was tough and it did make me sad. So, he had a Instagram post about like life is a marathon and I'm still early on and excited to have, you know, more runway ahead of me. And, I was kind of like, hey, man, like if he's, whether it's Live, PGA Tour, whatever it is, the fact that he's back out making a dedication to professional golf, hopefully this is a somewhat longer term thing. Clearly, by his appearance with where he's been, that's a very positive thing for Anthony Kim. So golf aside, I'm just happy to see that hopefully he's coming on some better times because he's clearly been through some tough stuff. So that is my only sobering Live thought of the week. And I'll kick it to you, Walker, for dirt.
That was good dirt. I'll pick up at drinking and I'll actually pick right up at South American Dark. I made some coffee this week ahead of time and I never do this, but it's been wild here recently. There've been a lot of mornings where I'm up and out of here pretty early and I just went ahead and got prepped and made like 30 ounces of coffee that I'll put in a mason jar ready to go. If I end up having to move out early again this week, it happened to me last week. I think I mentioned the Celsius play, like never a spot that you want to be in when you're missing out on really good coffee and substituting for something far inferior. So, that's where I'm at coffee wise. I've got some medium, beans that I need to get into, but I'm cruising with South American as long as I can. Going towards more of the alcoholic front, last night we got in, we were at Cabot Citrus from like, you know, just call it 7 to 7, full shift. And we were real hungry as we were heading out of there. And I go in, go to use the restroom before we leave. And we were discussing on maybe the 15th hole, what what the beverage of choice was going to be for the Cabot brand at Citrus Farms. Like, is it going to be some sort of basically like Orange Crush situation? And we're right on. We go in, there's like some bachelor party that these guys are hanging out late night, going to get, you know, shipped back to Tampa in a big old van. And they are pounding this Cabot Crush that they have in a, you know, big old glass jar. And it's sitting right there by the bathroom. I figured, hey, you know, there's plenty of this. I'll take a cup myself. And it was really nice. Had some of that vanilla cream in there that you get on, like, you know, those old school popsicles. It was really sweet, and it was strong.
I didn't even think about that, but I guess that was probably the idea. That's probably the direction they're going.
Yeah, like orange cream soda, basically.
God, I'm stupid.
It was money. And it hit me like a freight train as we were headed to Chick-fil-A. We did a little Chick-fil-A mukbang last night. It was basically one of those, yeah, just give me most of the things on the menu. We went over the Chick-fil-A order with the cookie jar guys as they made their trip to the U.S. And was curious kind of what they were getting into. But I think firmly the sandwich and nugget play, or sandwich and strips play, it's just the way to go. You go one spicy, one not. You know, frosted lemonade, some fries, and then you're out of there. So that's what we got into. I echo your take on the nuoc chom. The salad at Pho 183 was really good. And then lastly, the Cracker Tavern, which we went to on Saturday morning, was just fantastic. We got a little diner food, got into some corned beef hash. I have always been a corned beef hash fan. I really have. I grew up making it, but you got to be selective with corned beef hash. You can't just buy everybody's corned beef hash, because it can be problematic at times going in and coming out. And we got into some really good stuff. It's always good when it's in a block. You have nice chunks, good sear on the flat top. Really hard to beat. And that'll wrap up eating. I've got more there, but nothing really of substance. On the reading front, I'm continuing along with Paul Thoreau. I've really enjoyed, this is travel writing, Figures in a Landscape. And he's got range, man. I tell you what, you know, travel writing, as I mentioned earlier this year, it's a genre that was one that I wanted to get into. I look forward to traveling more in my later 20s. But learning about how people approach travel, particularly this guy, the way he approaches travel, going against kind of the groupthink of, oh, hey, this is where people actively choose not to go. I'm going to go there, and this is the view that I'm going to take. He talked early on in the book about mainly just politicians and news. Like, you go travel to a place, and they kind of get the red carpet treatment. And depending on how you enter a given country and what you experience inside of it, your view on it is just not accurate. You really do have to go straight to the bottom and then work your way up to get an understanding of a place. And he kind of adapts that model, takes that model everywhere he goes. I've really enjoyed that. And then I read a quote. I was poking around in one of my quote books earlier about creative thinking. Creative minds always have been known to survive any kind of bad training. This is a quote by Anna Freud, and I found it really interesting. You know, creativity, especially if you do it for somebody else, is one of those really interesting things, because you often feel like you get bad advice, bad guidance. You're always adapting to it's like a game of telephone. You're trying to understand somebody's vision and give it to them in as little drafts as possible. And it can be frustrating at times when you want to apply your own, you know, creative lens to it, and it just doesn't fit with somebody else's eye. And I feel like a lot of people who do work creatively for others feel this way. It's something that I've battled a lot within the last 2 years, but it's good. It's like it's a necessary hurdle to kind of figuring out what you like and the way that you like to do things. So I read that quote, really resonated with me. And then on to thinking. I don't have much here. I had so much fun yesterday. I think it's important for obviously you and me to get off site as much as possible. We don't do this enough. Like, We play golf separately, and any time that
we don't play golf,
and any time that we can get, you know, back together and play, it's always, it just raises my spirit, and I love having Trey with us. It's really great. It's fun watching Trey in his element. This is something that we were talking about yesterday, where we were riding around, and Trey was like doing most of the work, videoing.
All and of the work is probably also a fair way to put it.
Yeah, much better. He's going to appreciate that correction, and so did I, because it is true. And I feel guilty about that kind of thing. I want to help, and I want to learn as much as I can. But Henry made a great comment yesterday. He was like, man, this is what he loves to do, and this is what he's really good at. Like, you've got to just stay out of the way and let it happen. And the whole atmosphere yesterday, we had a match going, you know, enjoying a place that I've gotten to spend a lot of time at in multiple different contexts. It was just great. I really enjoyed the whole day, and as many of those as we can do, in as many really interesting locations as possible. That's kind of the goal. So let's wrap up dirt. Let's get on to it. Henry, I'm gonna kind of set you up here. We're going to go through 2013, Adam Scott's victory at the Masters. We're going to go through 2015, our boy Jordan Spieth's victory. And of course, you knew we had to do it. We're talking 2019, Cat's victory. So we've got a couple things on each one. We're going to kind of go off the dome. Of course, this is Mudball Monday. So we're going to have some just total rogue thoughts appear, and I'm going to let Henry take the lead on those. But then we're actually going to get into some of our core memories from each of these events. 2013, right? Adam Scott, a player that is objectively, he was undervalued. And the year prior, you know, losing at the Open in 2012, just choking at Lytham and St. Ann's, a course that you've played competitively. I want to get your takes on that. Adam Scott was not even really a storyline the first couple days, and it really took a while for this thing to develop late into the back nine on Sunday. What do you remember from that week?
So one of the overarching thoughts that I had here about, you know, this episode and kind of what we're going to speak on is, so first and foremost, like the Masters, like I mentioned earlier, like we need the Masters. So it's time to talk about it with this golf season and this just overarching season of golf. I'm not talking about the 2024 season, but just like the phase that we're in, like we need good stuff right now. And the Masters is the best stuff. The second thing here is that, like, we're talking about three of the ones we remember the most. The Masters is, like, it is the definition of nostalgia in golf. You know, like, yes, while we remember the U.S. Open and we remember the Open Championships that are really good, you know, I can run through 38 memories on every single Masters every year going back. It's just that these are some of the ones that stick out. And so this is kind of a fun way for our initial primer to be to talk about some of the ones that really stick out in our memory. But then, so getting towards 2013 here, in order from 13, 15, and 19, I believe that there are like three ways that I would classify a Masters and who the ultimate champion is and what it kind of means for that champion's career and legacy. You have the validation in a player like Adam Scott, a guy, as you mentioned, like blows the 2012 Open Championship. Clearly, he's a great player. Like there's zero question about that. It's just like, when is this going to happen? And, you know, I've talked to Mr. Tron Carter about this. Like, not every major is that full-blown validation. However, if you win the Masters, football game. Like, you've done it. You know, you're there.
Does Sergio that apply Garcia's, to Patrick Reed as well?
Put him out of here. Great shout out there. But, you know, 2017 is another great example. It's like Sergio. We know Sergio's great. Like, when is this going to happen? If he had won a PGA or something, you're kind of like, just want a little bit more. But it's like you won the Masters. You've done it. You're good. Congratulations. Cheers. You know, that's Adam Scott, the validation. There's the arrival. There are these young players that we know are great. They come in hot. They win it. And it's like, okay, he is officially here. He has years to be really good. And they have arrived on the scene. They've, you know, it's arrival and validation. But to me, the younger guys has a little bit more of that sense of like, this guy has arrived and like, look out. finally, we have 2019, the classification of the resolution. You know, I think all the way back to the second win from Ben Crenshaw. I think about Phil's 2010 victory. Of course, he had more to say about that. Twice more in 2013 and 2021. But there are certain Masters victories that feel like this is probably about the last thing that this guy's going to do. And it's just like, wow, like how could you better kind of put a top on it for your career? Obviously, 86 is another great example there of like probably about the last thing that you'll see from somebody, but just a really great way to cap it off. And that's 2019. So apologies for being long-winded there on kind of like setting the scene a little bit here. But yeah, when I think back to 2013, you said it really well that like Adam Scott, he was slow to get into that week after a 2012 where he played a ton of great golf and, you know, namely the Open Championship. When I think back to that Open Championship, the last four holes at Lytham and St. Ann's are so freaking hard. Like it's nearly par for the course to bogey those last four holes. Like 18, if it's windy enough, is like truly about an unhittable fairway. And 15 through 17 are not a lot easier. So, you know, we give him a slight hall pass there, but it's that year of like, or it's that time for Adam Scott where you're like, when is this going to happen? Like, is this guy going to, is he going to do anything? Is he going to get that major or is it going to pass him by? We've talked about Everest theory. Like you don't just climb the mountain the whole way. You make some pushes, you have a chance. And if the weather gets really shitty when you're at 27,000 feet, brother, you're coming down and it's a long road to get back up there. And he was very clearly like at a very advanced camp. He was at camp 7 waiting to make a summit push. And if he had had one more bad weather storm come in the form of Angel Cabrera, it wasn't going to happen, but it did. So that's kind of how I think about 2013. Let me get into a few notes and novels here on 2013. I think, you know, let's talk about the amateurs. Who was in the amateur field? Stephen Fox, 2012 U.S. Amateur Champion. We had Michael Weaver, runner-up. Nathan Smith, shout out Mid-Am Golf. Alan Dunbar, low amateur. Guan Tian Lang, you remember that 14-year-old? Ends up getting the slow play penalty.
I think that was the first year that they did the Asia Pacific Amateur, I think.
I think it was before that because I'm pretty sure Hideki would have been before that. I could be wrong, but it feels like he probably would have been before Guan, but anyway. And finally, TJ Vogel. So this is a blast from the past. That's the U.S. Publinks champion. So this is back when we still did the Publinks as opposed to the Latin America amateur champion getting in. DFL, we got to talk about, you know, bookends here, who wins and who loses. Hiroyuki Fujita. I originally wrote down his name as Fajita, but it is in fact Fujita. And this is going to be a bit of a theme here. Ben Crenshaw, DFL, 164 final score there for two rounds. A quote here that I think becomes awfully interesting over 10 years later. It was one guy who inspired a nation of golfers, and that is Greg Norman. It would mean everything to him. That was a Saturday night quote from Adam Scott. My, oh my, how things have changed over 11 years. And finally, this being probably the most important note far and away of the 2013 Masters, this is the first year that Augusta decides to make the pimento cheese in-house. That's right. They've gone away from the longtime recipe and people is pissed. Apparently, it's just not the same that it was. I should have written this quote down, but our guy Wright Thompson had a spicy quote that Augusta gets virtually nothing wrong and they completely botched this one. So people are pissed about the pimento cheese. You know, maybe that's why Adam Scott played well. He strikes me as a guy that's probably not dabbling in a lot of pimento cheese and egg salad. Maybe the other guys are, you know, just not in a good mood that week because they're not getting to scratch that itch the way that they please. You know, maybe we're starting to make some sense here of what happened. But anyway, enough with the bullshit there. We'll have more in the next 2 years. What else for 2013? Like, do you have any really core memories of that back nine in particular? Obviously, Cabrera looks like he might pick off a third major, which would have been wild. It was raining all day. Scott wore glasses the whole time. A lot to recall from that event.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, we've seen a lot of weather on Sunday, not just recently, but in general at Augusta. It was not only rainy, but it was windy. Like, it was disgusting out there.
It's not
and good. I forgot you know, how big of a push Day made. Like, you talked about Everest theory, and, you know, Day was hanging out at Camp 7 for a long time there. And really, it wasn't till 15, kind of when Spieth was making his push, where Day had to go back down to base camp. But prior to that, Day was at the top of his game for a long time, and he was very much in that golf tournament.
And that's a good example with Day, where he made those pushes, but to me, he never got validation. You know, he was right there 2013 at Marion. Team Rose picked him off. There are a bunch of examples, but that PGA, it's just, it's not validation. You know, it was like,
it's a 0.6.
You left the cheese off the burger, brother. You know, like, I was so excited and for a true smasher, and you forgot the cheese and gave me one pickle. You know, you gave me one pickle. But that's just such a tough scene. And so, that would make my life if J-Day came back and got it done. But I don't know. The Malvin stuff is brutal. But anyway, we're not talking about that. On you go. I apologize.
Yeah, I'll leave that one to the side, because I'm long on Malvin. And I just think it's a good fit. I'm sticking with that one. I think we need time to watch that one develop. But let's move on to Cabrera. I don't want to speak on anything about Cabrera outside of the grounds of Augusta National. But at the grounds of Augusta National, he's a character and a player, and I love him. He's got just this carefree kind of mechanics golf game that I love. It's so homemade. It's so authentic. And then lastly, Snedeker. I just completely forgot about that guy. But, you know, you look back to really 2010 to 2015, like, Snedeker was playing great golf with the pop
stroke. Camp Fiver, Camp Six, maybe.
Camp Six. I think that's
like
fair.
If you get like a really good weather day, maybe he would have been like, fuck, like, we're close, we could just do this, you know? But that's probably your own chance.
But nothing about Snedeker really said this guy is a tip top champion. Yet he was just a scrappy little guy. Like, he played great golf, made a bunch of putts. He and Big Dick Rick just rattled the back of cups for 5 years. You know, those two guys hit four footers so hard, it made me nervous. You know, anyways, moving on. It really wasn't until, you know, 12, 13, 14 that I even started thinking about Scott. And I want to go back to the 2012 Open, because this was just, we'll get into the golf gods later once we get into Cat's victory in 2019. But how perfect is it that the year prior, Lithuanian St. Anne's, you know, you bogey the last four holes to lose by one after you so clearly had it. You know, you go listen to his press conference on Saturday, and he made some comments that he was not wrong by making, but just eating the words that he made on Saturday was so tough. And his Sunday press conference was amazing. You go back and listen to that. Like, he handled it so well, so candid. But at the same time, you know, he made it happen on 18. Like, that putt that he dropped on 18 was it was cut and fill from what happened in 2012. And to make the putt again on the second playoff hole was just nails. And, you know, this was at a time, we're still doing this, but everybody was barking about his putter. You know, he's got an amazing golf swing. He's got all the tools except for one. And that was the broom. But without those two putts, he would never have a green jacket. And does it really matter how many putts you make unless you make them under pressure? The answer is no. So Adam Scott's also just such a great representative of the Masters. Like, you think about every year, it is a factor when people are coming down the stretch. You're like, who would be a good representation of the Masters, of the club? Who do you want as a champion? It's not just about the leaderboard in the vacuum of that golf tournament. It's like, no, this person, Pat Reed or Cat, is going to be a part of this club's history forever. And you want it to be, you know, I love Tedecky. You know, it's such a great addition. But
Patrick Reed, Danny Willett, just like ideal.
Exactly. Those guys, those guys were born to be in that room at the champions dinner. So that also factored in. Scotty's just he's just such a great fit for that jacket. We're getting long in the tooth in 2013. Take me to 2015. I know we've got takes here. Jordan Spieth, the 21-year-old golden child.
I gotta add one more thing. Two very brief things on 2013. And I do really apologize in advance for, you know, the name drop sort of deal here, but like this was a cool moment, so I gotta mention it. Vuele, the shot into 18 mm-hmm. from Cabrera was just like awesome. Raining, I think it was like a 165, like up the hill, raining 9-iron, which is just like an absolute seed of a 9-iron in those conditions. Like probably playing low 180s, and he just like hits it to 3 feet. That was just freaking nails. So here's the name drop. Sorry. I did one time get to have dinner with Adam Scott, and we were kind of doing a like round the table. People ask a question. I end up getting tagged with asking a question to Adam Scott. Talk about, you know, shitting yourself. I asked about that putt on the second playoff hole, and he's like a really soft-spoken guy that's not typically going to be this way and kind of like stick his chest out, especially in front of a group. But what he said is, he was like, look, I'd been, you know, knocking on the door, waiting for too long. I really didn't think, it's not that I wasn't confident, but I just didn't think I was winning the next day. It was dark as shit. A classic. It is so much darker than the cameras make it look out here. And I didn't even know that, but he was like, that was the last shot being hit that day. I was done with like screwing around. And so I just ripped it at the middle of the hole. He said it was going like 8 or 9 feet by, and it nailed the hole and went in. So I remember that putt vividly. It was really cool. And I think he was like crying immediately. I mean, it was the validation. It was really, really neat stuff. So for the third time, sorry for the name drop there, but I did think it was cool hearing him kind of articulate that. 2015, let me throw it right back to you. We're getting into Spieth. It was the glory days. You know, we pray that stuff like this happens again. I hit the pillow every night thinking about these sorts of moments. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know, maybe the Tooth Fairy has something for me. So what do you recall from 2015? Wire to wire, just an absolute unit week.
It was a huge year for Jordan. I mean, two majors. Above all, I just love the nod of respect to Cat, just making the courtesy bogey on 18, you know, choosing not to break Cat's record. I thought that what a nice way to enter the scene as a, you know, the 21-year-old golden boy from Dallas. He says, Cat, you know, I'll spare you one, but I want to sit next to you in the champions dinner. It was just the perfect, just pure class look by Jordan. And really, in a bag, the only thing that I remember from the week was that he made golf look so easy. You know, as somebody who can play golf okay, you know, and getting to play Palmetto and some of these golf courses that are just, it's hard to understand how hard they are until you really play that style golf in competition. Like Palmetto at face value is hard, but when you play it, when it's tuned up, it looks harmless. And then you just get ejected.
When you're off by like 2%.
Right. And Augusta, I've never played it. I may never play it, but I know it is that way to the power of whatever. And so I have so much respect for the golf course, and you hear pros talking about it. But he made it 28 birdies. I mean, he made that place look so easy, and I know they got a good weather draw, you know, yada, yada, yada. You know what else I forgot is that he opened with 64, and I would say that's kiss of death material, but what the hell do I know? Guy won the Masters. And I've got more. I think 13 and 15 on Sunday that was like his initiation to become one of the game's greats, choosing to go for both of those par fives on Sunday. You can make the argument that you have to, but you don't. Nobody's forcing you to. Nobody's saying Jordan Spieth can't make birdies with wedges and putters, because they'd be crazy. Yet he did, and he could have been ejected. He very well could have found the water on 13. He very well could have, you know, missed the up and down on 15, but he didn't, and he birdied both of those. And that made things much, much easier coming down the stretch. And so I just remember Rory, you know, shout out Rory, fourth place. Just standard Rory material, instant top five, guaranteed second or below. Or, you know, Rory just said, without a doubt, this guy's the real deal. And that was kind of a turning point for, felt like a win for the young guys. What do you remember from the week?
Yeah, well, let's start out here with some important stuff. Well, so 13 and 15. We're coming off of Bubba wins, 12 and 14, which means we're having Bubba Champions Dinner. So let's talk about that for a moment. I think we all recall he did the same thing twice. And look, I'm not going to poke holes in the Caesar salad call. Like, a Caesar salad's awesome. Is it what I would serve at a Masters Champions Dinner when I can serve anything in the world? Probably not. Funfetti cake for dessert? There are millions of better decisions. Is it the worst one ever? Maybe not. What I take just egregious issue with is the call on chicken breast. Breast? We're serving breast for a champions dinner at Augusta? I don't know what to say there, but that's significant for both 13 and 15. Moving on to the amateur field. We have seven this year. So we have a Latin America amateur champion in the field. We still have the public links. I think this might have been our last one. Gun Yang, U.S. Amateur Champion. Corey Connors, U.S. Amateur Runner-Up. Bradley Neal, Antonio Murdaka, Matias Dominguez, Byron Meth, and Scott Harvey, Mid-Amateur Champion. None of them make the cut, so we don't have a low amateur. Technically, one of them is low for the amateurs, but you have to make the cut to win silver medal, so no low amateur this year, which is a tough scene. Okay, this was a cat year like none other, if you remember correctly. So it's a huge story going into it. Coming off of the Hero World Challenge where Spieth won by like 10, that was the yip week when Cat like could not chip the ball. Now, it did look really sandy out there, but had the yips. If you remember from, I'm just going purely off of memory here, but the waste management, he was like hitting these bump and run four irons that were going like 40 yards over the green. I think he shot like 82 or 84. I kind of had forgotten some of this, that he took time off from golf because he was so bad around the greens. And people, it's like a very real story going into this Masters. Like, has Tiger lost his short game touch? And is he going to get it back? Well, it gets better, as it always does with the Cat. He comes in, he's confident, his press conferences are good. If you remember, there's the video of him at the short game area, listening to music, like dancing, just vibing. He was asked about it in the press conference. And he, quote, was rocking out on the short game area to stay loose. Cat was staying loose. He played fine. I think he finished T17. But it was, I forgot how significant of a story that was going into that week, that for the 3 or 4 months prior, not only had the short game been really, really bad, but he had taken formal time away from the game because he was playing so badly, which is pretty fascinating. Now, once again, it always gets better with the Cat. He blessed us with, for my money, potentially the best quote of all time in the 2015 Masters. Ninth hole on Sunday, the big right miss, of course. We're over in the weeds, or not the weeds, the pine straw. There are many roots in the pine straw. He hits a root, and I quote, the bone popped out, but I, once again, Ben Crenshaw, dead fucking last 91-85. So there's your bookend. Couple Texans. 2015, I mean, I recall Spieth on the 14th on Thursday hitting the pin with a four iron. He's like total flared driver into the woods. It was like, that's when you kind of knew already. You know, I think he was 5 or 6 under on the round at that point. And that was like the only bad shot he'd hit all day was in the woods on 14. And he hits this like slicey four iron that hits the stick and makes another birdie. It was just a masterclass end to end. That was the arrival. It was like, this guy's been playing absurd golf. Can he keep it going at Augusta? We know this is a course that fits him really well. He shows up and just blows the door off, you know, like not all that much to say. I mean, he's 21 years old, makes the courtesy bogey, as you mentioned, on the 18th. And that was just one of the, you know, it was frankly not the most exciting Masters just because it was a wire to wire win.
Yeah,
the whole time you're just trying to avoid the train wreck, essentially. You know, it's like a NASCAR race, and somehow or another, he got a whole lap ahead of everybody. And it's like, hey, look, unless someone plays dirty and there's a wreck here, like, he's got this thing. That's just kind of how it felt the whole way. And, you know, while that one is highly nostalgic, it also, like, there's some pain to those memories because we've been deprived for all too long from that action. And, I don't think that we never get to see it again, but do we get to see it at Augusta, at a proper major championship? I don't know. Only time will tell.
So a couple things there before we move on to 2019, which is what we're all here for, to be honest. So the 14th hole, that four iron that he hit from the woods, hit the stick. I think I have a glitch on my phone. Anytime that I go to send a GIF to somebody, or a GIF, regardless of how you fellas pronounce it, I could type in underwater basket weaving or NASCAR or dirt. It does not matter. And that shot, 14, pulls up. I don't know what it is. Every single time it pulls up for any search request.
That's awesome.
I forget what else I was going to say. Moving on, 2019, Tiger. You know, we're all wishful thinkers, but Cat had never won from chasing behind coming into 2019. And I was thinking about it. It's like the odds were very clearly against him, but wishful thinking is such a powerful, powerful thing that we all believed he was going to win. And this is, I think, to some degree, a different Tiger Woods. Going back to 2015, we were talking about Spieth. You were saying how coming down the stretch, 12, 13, 14, desperately just trying to avoid the train wreck. But things tend to even out for us, like they did later on for Spieth on that very same stretch. You know, Cat the same. 14 majors prior to 2019, but had a very difficult life, and you know, injuries, all the rest, made us believe that there wasn't another storyline where Cat would be presented with the green jacket at Augusta, and we had made peace with that. Yet those difficulties brought us to the very story that was possible as he walked onto the first tee on Sunday. And, you know, I'll say this because I know you got a lot coming here. Whatever the feeling is when Francesco Molinari hit the ball in the water on 13, whatever that feeling was like walking off the tee and across the bridge, if you could bottle that and sell it to the public, you could buy back golf from the Saudis with ease. That would be Q1 sales. You could buy golf back from the Saudis. Because I'm sure that feeling was second to none. I can confidently say I've never felt anything like that in my life. You know, and walking off the 13th tee, you're tied with Molinari, you're tied with Xander, and you still had the spiciest golf tournament of all time. You had 8 other players within 2 strokes of the lead. And kind of as I was saying before, the golf gods, they take notes. They have their favorites, and they do not forget. And so really where I'd like you to pick up from is, you know, 13 to 18, because there was quite a lot that happened in that stretch.
Well, first off, the important stuff. Amateurs, Victor Hovland, your low amateur, played a great week. Devin Bling, Kevin O'Connell, Jovan Rabula, Takumi Kanaya, and Alvaro Ortiz. Cabrera, Angel Cabrera, and Olazabal, DFL, 157. Quote of the week, Tiger Woods: I'll wake up around 3:45, start the process of getting this body ready, and get after it. Of course, the tee times are bumped forward on Sunday. Tiger has to wake up well before he plays to get going, and that was an awfully early morning from him. This is the first ANWA year. Jennifer Kupcho takes the W. I remember that being pretty electric. That shot into 13 was extremely impressive. First time we get to see women play out at Augusta, it was great, and it still is great. There's a list that I can't remember the publication that put this forth, so no credit given here, but there's a list of things that comes forth. Excuse me, it was golf.com. that only players know about Augusta National. And I picked off a few of my favorites here. There were about 12 or 15. Apparently, many of the players agree upon the fact that Augusta National has the best fried chicken in the world. I do not doubt that. Masters champions can only bring a guest without playing with a member the Sunday before the Masters, one day a year. That's not surprising, but also surprising at the same time. There is a tunnel under the range to the media center. I would love, it's one of the wonders of the world to know the extent of the tunnel system at Augusta National. I mean, there might be a direct tunnel to fucking Beijing that comes from the dungeon of the clubhouse. I mean, they surely, from what I hear about the wine cellar at Augusta, there's got to be a tunnel straight to like the French Alps, you know, just whipping in Bordeaux's left and right and one out, you know, to Napa and like all the hot spots. They have to be just importing the wine directly through some sort of tunnel system. You know, it's like when you go to the bank and you put the money in the tube, like that's how they get wine to Augusta. They don't put it on trains and planes and all that sort of stuff. There's no menu at Augusta for the players in the locker room, zero menu. You ask for what you want and it shows up. I'm having memories. Have you seen Bench Warmers?
Yes, again, but it's been a while. I'm off on the movie deal.
Great movie. The robot number 7 that you just like say your order to and he just like whips it up. I'm envisioning that's what Augusta's like, you know, you just tell him absolutely any combination and there it is. Final point. Never noticed this. The trees are all cut such that the weight of the pine needles leans the trees slightly in towards the fairways. I mean, if that's not some Augusta shit, then I don't know what is. Maybe that's why we got trees falling a few years later. I don't know. It might have come back to bite them. So those are your important notes of 2019. Picking it up on 13, as you mentioned. So I'm actually going to kind of take a detour here and explain my my experience with the 2019 Masters. So, and this was my experience with 2016 or 17 all the way through like 2021. I played the Western Collegiate every year, Western Intercollegiate Paso Tiempo. Practice round was always on Sunday. It was a college practice round. So, of course, it took 8.5 hours to play right through Sunday at the Masters. I mean, just what could be better, right? So, obviously, that's an amazing day. Like, everyone's just so fired up. And none of us that are playing in the tournament get to watch it because we're out fucking around in a practice round. I remember that being the longest coaches meeting in the world. I mean, go figure. They started the coaches meeting around the time that Tiger was playing the back nine. And I guess they just had like 2.5 hours worth of stuff to talk about in that meeting. You know, usually the coaches meeting is like, it lasts about a hole and a half. Your head coach will go away. They, you know, they tell you the rules for the week and then they're back. They're back to join the practice round by like the 12th hole. We didn't see our coaches for the rest of the day. And, you know, I think that there's probably something else going on there. It was actually a really cool experience in certain ways because, I mean, here we are on the West Coast playing another McKinsey gym. Everybody that's in this practice round is watching it on their phones. And you could hear, like, there were certain teams that, again, like every single team, you can see everyone just like looking at their phone, watching it. Their phones might've been slightly ahead because guys are just screaming, you know, a few seconds before from like three holes over as cats, like birdieing 16 and hitting all these shots. So it, on one hand, it was like kind of a cool way to experience it. On the other hand, it fucking sucks that I didn't get to watch it in front of a big TV. But I have gone back at least 5 to 7 times, if not more than that, and watched every single minute of the YouTube broadcast. It's like a 5-hour, 37-minute video, and I've watched it like 5 times all the way through. Most recently, about 2 weeks ago. So it's just kind of a you know every 8 months sort of thing for me these days, and it's one of those days that just like the way that Tiger talked about being patient. And that's just kind of one of those, like, it's one of those interview things, right? Like, you're just, oh, what are you going to do tomorrow? I'm going to be patient. But goddamn, if that guy wasn't playing just the most patient brand of golf and letting everything come to him you've ever seen and just hitting the shots when they needed to be hit, letting the other guys crumble around him. I mean, just greatness out of you there on the 15th hole. Molinari hitting into the water, hits the pine cone. I mean, it's just like, yes, like one of the most ecstatic moments you can imagine, because obviously 12 is super significant, but when he hits it in the water on 15 from 80 yards out or whatever it was, like that's when, okay, like Frank is gone And now we're just worried about, you know, Brooks, basically. Obviously, the shot on 16 is like one of the better shots in the history of the Masters. That was absolutely electric. One thing that pisses me off every time I watch that broadcast, Nance like halfway conceded the thing to Tiger when he's on the 18th tee. He has a two-shot lead. Brooks, I believe, had already hit it reasonably close on 17. Like Tiger's 14 under. Brooks is 12. Brooks has 12 feet for birdie on 17. And it's like, well, fuck, what happens if Tiger hits it behind a tree on 18? And Nance is sitting there as Tiger's pegging it, saying like, we're getting ready to see it again, or we're one hole away from glory. And I'm like, fuck off, dude. Like, let the man at least hit the fairway before you're going to talk about that. So I'm still pissed at Nance because, I mean, you never know. Like, things happen retroactively, and you do not want to jinx the cat. The shot on 18, I think a lot of this has to do, I'm curious to hear your reaction here. I think a lot of this has to do with how I look at the shot and think about how I would feel in the moment. And with some of the chipping stuff Tiger went through, you know, going back to 2015, that tight nipper that he, like, we're not dealing with three shots here. You know, if he chunks that 40 yarder into the 18th green or catches a little thin, I mean, that had to be hit well. And thank every God that people bless on this earth, he did. But yeah, like that goes back to me being pissed at Nance. Like that thing was not over until Brooks's putt didn't go in. You know, like we were right there. Brooks had an incredibly good putt for that thing to go to a playoff. But yeah, man, that was pretty amazing stuff. So,
you know how people talk about the lies at Augusta and how they're not actually that good. Everything is perfect. Yeah,
well, it's
out
into
there.
The grain. It's all into the grain.
It's all into the grain. And even though they do such a great job with coverage, like it's such dense, you know, ryegrass, but even still, the lies are not as good as the golf course looks. And yes, you've got a giant backstop, but you're right. That was it. That was one of those shots where you do have to hit a very real one. You can't just kind of lean down there and hit an average shot because you're going to get exposed. And
also let me correct myself. I was wrong there saying that Brooks is behind Tiger. That's not true. Brooks is ahead of Tiger. So what happened, Tiger's on the 18th tee as Nance is like conceding this shit to him. Brooks has hit it to like 12 feet or 9 feet or whatever it is on 18.
17.
No, on 18. Brooks is ahead. 18. So Brooks has a putt to reach 13 under and Tiger sat on the tee at 14 under. So you're sitting here thinking there's a 50% chance Tiger has to probably somewhere in there.
Has to
make par. And Nance is sitting here saying the thing is over. So just, yeah, I'm still pissed at Nance. It's just bullshit.
And 18 is easily bogeyable, but okay. I mean,
doubt.
Yeah. But
it did happen. Okay.
It did happen. There we go.
Yeah. Okay. I think.
So, I want to tread back a little bit because when Brooks was on 17T, right? You had the, oh my goodness, from Vern, which was just pure class.
Yes.
I'm sure Nance was just like ushering him to that moment, you know? But every fan on, there was this shot of Koepka on 17T and he had just hit his tee shot and nobody is looking at him. Like they're standing on the 17T. They don't have enough time or enough space to move down to 16 green. But nobody, if they could look through the guy, they would. And Koepka's right there watching as Tiger hits it tight on 17. That was a memorable shot. And then just coming off the green, Tiger walking off the green on 18, like stuff that makes you legitimately tear up. I still
I'm not bullshitting. I still cry every time I watch the YouTube video. Again, yeah. I'm not trying to make this just sound like funny and dramatic. I cry every time, and I've watched it 6 times.
It wasn't at Augusta Country Club, but I think it was Columbus. I can't remember where I was at, but I was playing at a college event not too far from there, and we were doing the same thing you were doing. We were a little bit ahead of you, but we were right there at the golf course, and everybody was in that men's locker room watching Tiger come up 18 and off 18 green. And there were tears, you know?
Some of the most genuine, like, ecstasy I've ever seen among a crowd of people ever. Like, when he walks off that green, and I mean, Tiger being the leader of the pack, which is just amazing to watch, but every single person is just, like, so unbelievably excited about it. Like, when he walked, after he, you know, obviously the hug with Charlie and all of that, when he's walking up that tunnel, the number of grown-ass men that are just like, they cannot contain themselves out of how excited they are. You know, one of my, actually my favorite pieces of that whole scene, it's in the Masters video, I think, actually. You know, they do a great, the Masters YouTube page, they do a great hour-long breakdown or so of each tournament, which is, that's what I watch for other years, but for the Tiger year, I watched the whole 5-hour thing. If you look closely at one of the camera shots when Tiger makes that last putt from, you know, 15 inches or so, if you kind of look across the crowd, you can see that Condoleezza Rice is sitting there right on the front row.
Interesting.
And she kind of like puts her heads in her hands and like looks down as Tiger sets up to that 15 incher, just as a, like, I truly cannot watch this. And then when the putt gets, she basically just looks down and listens for the crowd. Mm-hmm. And when everything blows up, she like flies out of her seat. Like, I think she got double the air that Phil ever got on a single jump in his life.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
It was really, which, yeah, maybe that's not the best way to put it. But it's a really cool moment to see, you know, someone like that watching a guy like Tiger. I don't think that you're going to see many lapses of composure out of Condoleezza Rice. It's probably fair to say. But watching Tiger hit a 15 incher to win the 2019 Masters, you know, she looked like a child that opened the best Christmas present of her life. So we could kind of riff on that stuff all day. You know, it's one of those moments that'll just live forever. And we are all, at least for me, speaking candidly, my life is truly better because that happened and will continue to be for quite some time. Last thing I'll say there, like, you make a comment about Vern, just pure class. This is number 40 and final for Vern.
Oh, really?
Off the dome. Is there any chance? I mean, there have been a couple electric, multiple electric Vern calls on the 16th that have involved Tiger. Is there anything there?
Brother, no. It's number one stays number one. It's so good.
Records are made to be broken. What if there's a new number one to come? What if he aces 16 on Sunday? Does Cat play 16 on Sunday?
That's a great question. I have to say yes. The answer is,
I think
yes.
He plays it on Saturday. The answer is yes. Sunday, we don't know.
No, I think it's, if Tiger holds it on Sunday, I'll feel it from here. I'll feel it from Tampa. The ground will shake. We might separate into a different country.
Let's make a deal. If he makes a hole in one on Sunday, we will have dinner together that night.
Shaking on it. That was beautiful. Done deal. Yeah, that's easy. I will drive, fly, or swim, whichever works best for you. And then, and just to put a bow on it, I mean, what better guy to put the green jacket on Cat than Pete Reed?
Patrick Reed.
I mean, you couldn't write it up better than that. And that's really all I got on the Masters. This year, we're not going to get into picks yet. But it's going to be an interesting Masters, and you're right, Henry, we need the Masters this year more than ever. And it'll be interesting to see, is the field final at this point, or is there more deliberating?
You got to think that these last couple PGA Tour winners, if there's someone that's not in the field, maybe somebody gets in, but we're probably getting close. I mean, maybe the jackets are holstering a surprise invite or two. I mean, I don't know who's high on that list. AK, maybe AK gets some action.
Well, kind of what I was going more towards was like, potentially like a PGA Tour U candidate, you know, somebody with outstanding amateur play this year.
Yeah, that's much better call than my bullshit. That would be cool. I mean, you know, the Gordon Sargent invite a couple years ago was kind of off the cuff. So
it was.
That would be neat to see. you know, Christo Lamprecht already in the field, won the British Amateur last year. He's number one in PGA Tour U, so they're not going to go to number two, although I wish they would, because that's Michael Thorbjornsson.
Yeah.
But I like that call. And who knows? I mean, we do know damn well they have the power to do what they want to do at Augusta National. So, like you said, we need it. That's Mudball Monday. We hope you all are as excited as we are. We will be back probably in a few weeks here for a more proper primer of sorts. But we thought this would be a fun way to kind of get the juices flowing for some of our favorite years at Augusta. So hope you all enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week on Mudball Monday.